What does Issues Etc. mean to you? Later this month, we'll celebrate the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc., and we want to hear from you. Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. 618-223-8384. What does Issues Etc. mean to you? 618-223-8384.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Wednesday afternoon, the 17th of June. We're going to talk about Lutheranism and the Civil War. Of course, the Civil War was a time in our country when families were divided, churches were divided, states were divided, not only over the issue of slavery, but slavery was the touch point for this great conflagration. We're going to be talking about the Civil War and how Lutherans weathered it and how they reacted to the issues swirling around it, North and South. Dr. Martin Noland joins us. He's past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Were Lutherans, by and large, quietists on the issue of slavery and pacifists when it came to the Civil War?
The Lutherans were divided on the matter of the Civil War and slavery. But they were not pacifists. I'm not aware of any Lutheran church body anyway that was pacifist. The Quakers in the United States were pacifists. That was part of their creed and doctrine. But Lutherans were not, because they followed Augustine's doctrine of a just war. And on the issue of the war, the Southern Lutherans thought that their succession was just, and the Northern Lutherans thought that their the beginning of the war to bring about the unity was also just. So they were definitely, Lutherans were not pacifists. Now, the issue of quietism, that means did they not hold an opinion or did make any fuss about a political issue? The closest that you could come to having a quietist in the Civil War was the Missouri Synod. And partly because it was in the Midwest, partly, I think, because it was in the state of Missouri, which was a divided state. People that know a little bit of Missouri state history will realize that it was a slave state, but early in the war, it was immediately brought over to the Union side. And that put anybody with a strong opinion in a very difficult situation. So the Missouri Synod was, I don't know if they actually passed a resolution. What happened was individual congregations were kind of forced to take a stand or not. But all the other Lutherans did take a stand, so they definitely were not quietists. And again, the Northern Lutherans were for abolition, and the Southern Lutherans were against abolition, and they held varying positions on the rightness of slavery. But that was definitely a political issue, and they contributed to the debate.
Can you clear something up for me? Because I vaguely remember, probably during my seminary days, a class where we were talking about this very issue, and it was probably the history of American Lutheranism in some sense. And I vaguely remember being told that C.F.W. Walther, one of the founders and the first president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, was for a time a holdout on withholding his signature from a loyalty oath that was required after the Civil War broke out. I think he did eventually sign it, but with a number of caveats. What's the real story there, if you know it?
This is part of Missouri state history also. So you can go to the textbooks on Missouri state history and find out about the loyalty oath, which was after the Civil War. It was proposed by, well, enacted by the legislature of Missouri, and it required anybody in a public office, which they also included preachers and teachers, that they had to sign a loyalty oath indicating complete agreement with the Union and that they had never held an opinion they'd never held an opinion that was contrary to the abolitionist stance. This put a lot of the pastors and priests in the state of Missouri into a difficult position because they had members, in many cases, that were slaveholders before the war. And part of the loyalty oath was that they would divulge who those members were, and even if it was a matter of confession, and then those people that had been slaveholders or pro-South would have been arrested and confiscated. And this happened in many counties. So it put not just C.F.W. Walther, it put all of the clergy in the state of Missouri into a very difficult position. Should they be loyal to their congregation, to their conscience, or loyal to the state of Missouri? What C.F.W. Walther did is, I think he joined some other clergy that were in the city of St. Louis, and they petitioned their congressman in Washington, D.C., and said, the state's doing this. Is this constitutional? And the congressman in D.C. Wrote back and said, no, this is not constitutional, and this is what you should do. You should sign it with conditions. So one of the leading priests of the Roman Church in St. Louis and C.F.W. Walther both did that, and they were criticized for it, the fact that they had put conditions in there. And then it went to court. I believe it went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and it was found that the provisions of the loyalty oath were contrary to the Constitution of the United States, and the loyalty oath was declared unconstitutional and void. So actually, C.F.W. Walther and the Roman priest and some others that joined them in this more or less protest were vindicated. And they didn't do it because they were in favor of slavery. They did it because they believed it was an infringement of the right of free practice of religion and of matter of conscience.
Talk a bit about the alienation of black Lutherans, especially in the South, when Lutheran churches, of which they would have been at least in the same confession, if not in the same congregation, were expressing favorable opinions about slavery and in favor of secession and of waging the war with the North.
The first indication of the South's position came in, that is the Lutherans in the South, came in 1835, which, you know, that's 25 years before the Civil War happened. And the South Carolina Synod, which was a rather numerous synod, passed a resolution that expressed strong disapproval of the Northern abolitionists. So the Northern abolitionists, as you know, were trying to, kind of like the pro-life movement today, trying to seek legal redress and ways of means of stopping slavery in the United States. The Lutherans in South Carolina disagreed with that, so clearly they had come out in favor of slavery. And then when the southern states seceded from the Union, the synods of the South, which would be in the same states that that were Confederate states, they, you know, expressed approval for the secession and as well as a formal statement in favor of slavery. After the war, then what happened here is that the Lutheran synods in the South ended up forming their own general synod called the Lutheran Synod of the South. And the African-Americans that had been associated with those, particularly there were a few pastors in that synod, now they were free men as much as they were free after the Civil War. And so they disassociated from the Lutheran Synod of the South and started their own. It was the first all-black African-American synod called the Alpha Synod. And over the years, they found it was difficult. I mean, they had no money, as no African-American in the South had after the war. And they finally decided to work in cooperation with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, which had not come out on any particular stand in the Civil War. It was basically a neutral position. And they found that the Missouri Synod, later than through the Synodical Conference, was willing to help out financially their churches and schools. And that is the root of the black ministry that is in the Missouri Synod today.
And we're really talking here about the fledgling Lutheran Church and Missouri Synod. It's a very, I mean, not only the people new to the country within decades, but the church itself the same as well. Did it find itself with few friends when they decided to either take a neutral position or to kind of stand moot on the issues surrounding the Civil War, at least among Lutherans?
Yeah, on Lutherans, they were kind of in a no-win situation. Although in their own states, because see, back then in the 19th century, the Lutherans were organized by states, so they called them state synods. And although the Missouri Synod extended beyond the state borders, it was kind of a different thing because most of Lutheranism was on the East Coast. But where the criticism came was in the church newspapers, most of which were written in the German language. And the East Coast was not just in favor of, would you say, legal abolition, but also they had indicated, you know, their empathy with some of the practices, for example, of John Brown and the others that were which we would consider illegal abolition. The Franckian Synod was a small synod of Lutherans formed in 1837. And the main difference between that and the other East Coast Lutherans is that it was a very politically vocal opponent of slavery. It was also against, it was in favor of temperance. So it was the Franckian Synod started out as a very socially active, very much into what we call social justice today.
Let's talk about more of that on the other side of this break. Dr. Martin Noland is our guest, past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. We're talking about Lutheranism during the Civil War. It's Wednesday afternoon, the 17th of June, 1-877-623-6943. Or talk back at issuesztc.org. The leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is proposing sweeping changes in structure and governance. These changes would further centralize power in the church's bureaucracy and decrease the voice of LCMS congregations and laity. Stay informed. Read the new broadcast transcripts on this subject. You'll find them at the top of the on-demand page at issuesetc.org. These transcripts are a must-read for every layperson and pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Issuesetc.org. Click on demand.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Chad Bird, Vicar Ned Mowerby, Lindsay Stewart, Joe Jewell, Norma Schroll, Tom Dubois, Caleb McCreary, David, Derek Lewis Knox, and Mike Ganskop. Thanks for your support.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What does Issues Etc. mean to you? Later this month, we'll celebrate the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc., and we want to hear from you. Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. 618-223-8384. What does Issues Etc. mean to you? 618-223-8384.
You'll find a clearinghouse of Reformation resources at newreformationpress.com. T-shirts, music, outlines of important theological books, plus lectures by Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Rod Rosenblatt. Check it out. NewReformationPress.com. If you like Reformation theology, you'll love New Reformation Press. www.newreformationpress.com. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, the 17th of June. We're here to respond to your questions or comments about Lutheranism and the Civil War. Talk back at issuesetc.org. or 1-877-623-6943. Marty, when we went to the break, you were talking a bit about the Franckian Senate out east during the time of the Civil War, their social activism. And I'm curious, you also say that the Lutheran Church of Missouri Senate at the time, because it kind of found itself on the outs with the rest of North American Lutheranism, decided to focus on basically uncharted territory geographically and missiologically. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, well, let's finish the Franckian Synod. They were pure abolitionism, so they would have agreed with the practices of John Brown and others, stealing slaves from the farmers. And if that ended up, you were shooting people, well, then that's too bad for the farmers. The General Synod was influenced by the Franckian Synod, but it didn't believe that illegal practices were okay. The General Synod was led by Samuel Simon Schmucker, who you've talked about many times on the radio. And Schmucker's position with the General Synod, which, by the way, was headquartered in Gettysburg, they held the necessity of gradual, by legislative, entire abolition of slavery throughout the states. So that was the General Synod. And, of course, as I said before the break, the Lutheran Synod of the South, after the beginning of the war, they were in favor of slavery. Well, the Missouri Synod took no stand. It was not abolitionist. At least it did not come out with a statement saying that slavery was an evil, a social evil. So for this, because they did not join the abolitionist cause with the General Synod, they were attacked by the Northern Lutherans. And because they did not, they were in a southern state in Missouri, they were headquartered there, but they didn't join the pro-slavery forces, they were attacked by the Southern Lutherans. So after the war, this made things difficult. And the Missouri Synod did have a couple of churches on the East Coast, New York, for example, and some in Pennsylvania, and a few in Maryland, but not much beyond that. And I think it forced them to say, well, we're really not going to make headway in the Eastern Province. Let's stick where we're located, even though there's not many people there, which was the central Midwest and the Western states, which were opening up the frontier just at that time. And that's where they did most of their home mission work. And I think the Civil War contributed to that Western thrust of the Missouri Synod, and it still shapes where our population is today.
Did President Lincoln's party, the Republican Party, again, just starting out as well, did it actively court German-American immigrants?
Yeah, now that is a really interesting story. Not necessarily Missouri Synod Lutherans, but in 1830 and 1848, there were a revolution of more democratic type of ideas in Germany. Well, both of those revolutions failed, and the people that were involved in that were either jailed or exiled, and many of them came to the United States. And a few of those people ended up in the Missouri Synod, too, including August Kramer, who was the first president of the Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. But these people that came from Germany had very democratic ideas. They believed in some of the ideals of the French Revolution, which was fraternity, that is, all human beings are equal. And so when they came in to the United States, and the abolition issues were going on, which they were in 1848 and the 50s, they sided immediately with the abolitionists. And this gave a great population thrust in terms of your political constituency to the Republican Party. There were very few Germans, except those that had settled in the 18th century in the South, very few Germans that were inclined to be pro-slavery. So this was they were definitely courted by Republicans, and when the Civil War took off, there were a lot of Union soldiers that came from a German background. In fact, some cases they only spoke German. There's a story, I don't know if we have time, but the battle in St. Louis, do we have a minute for that?
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting. If people read in St. Louis history, look for the date May 10th, 1861. It's the great Civil War battle in the city of St. Louis. And General Nathaniel Lyon, who was a Union general under the orders of Lincoln, to took 6,500 Union soldiers through St. Louis, marching from downtown to the west, and captured 689. So it was basically 10-to-1 odds of the Confederate troops. Now, almost all of the Union troops were German soldiers who had fought in the 1848 Revolution. And somewhere along the line, in their march through downtown St. Louis, they fired on an unarmed, rock-throwing crowd of Americans, killing 28 civilians, two women, and wounding 75 others. Well, this made the native population of people that had been in the United States for a long time very unhappy. And so they called that army that was taken over St. Louis Hessian mercenaries, an allusion back to the Revolutionary War. And the night after the attack, several Germans were rounded up and murdered by the, would you say, the pro-Southern forces in St. Louis. Well, this made a lot of people very nervous, and they fled by trains and buggies and whatever they could do out of town as fast as they could. And what happened then is that there was a great ethnic division in St. Louis during the Civil War, even though the Union was in charge, and for maybe a good generation or two thereafter. And the Missouri Synod was known as a German church. And so through those generations, which would be middle and late 19th century, they were called Hessian mercenaries. It gives an entirely different picture, once you know that, to the history of the Missouri Synod here in the city of St. Louis.
And then on a final note, you write that the Civil War was the very first use of Lutheran chaplains in an American war. Tell us about that with about a minute and a half.
Yeah, the of course, the Republican Party and Lincoln had, as you said, they had made this connection with the Germans, so they invited, especially where there was German-speaking soldiers, they invited the churches to submit chaplains. And the first chaplain that the Missouri Synod had was also one of these. His name was Frederick Richmond. He was the chaplain of a German regiment from Ohio, and the Concordia Historical Institute has his diary of his work for a year or two during the war. William Possevant of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, also well-known, was from Pennsylvania, and then the Klaus Clausen, chaplain of the Norwegian Lutherans. So this was the first time that Lutherans had served as chaplains in a United States war.
What would you say is the lasting impact of the Civil War on American Lutheranism, if you could put it in a paragraph?
Well, it divided the Lutherans in the 19th century. The North and the South, even after the war, were not talking to each other. And it really took until the beginning of the 20th century with the formation of the ULCA, which later became the LCA, for those divisions to be healed. And it also, I think, isolated the Missouri Synod. Misunderstanding, perhaps, but just we were considered outsiders and newcomers and were not part of the big game. So we started our own thing called the Synodical Conference in the late 19th century, and that kind of kept us separated from the other Lutherans. And that's an enduring influence with the result of the Civil War.
As we come to the end of this conversation, I want to remind our listeners that our guest, Dr. Barton Nolan, while he served in the past as director of the Concordia Historical Institute, is currently without a call in the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod. He's a fully qualified pastor and a really, really smart guy, as you can tell, and with some considerable pastoral experience. I want to encourage our listeners, if you know of a congregation that are in the process of casting about for a pastor to call to their congregation to serve them with word and sacrament, you can do no better by way of a faithful Lutheran confessing pastor, by way of preaching, sound teaching, and practice than Dr. Martin Nolan. I want to encourage all of our listeners to consider that if you know of a congregation that is currently looking for a pastor to call. Dr. Martin Nolan, remember his name. He's past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, it's always a pleasure, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is the Lutheran Study Bible. It's not out yet, but it is coming out, and it promises to be a great resource for individual Bible study, congregational Bible study, and an enduring resource for Lutherans for the generations to come. It's called the Lutheran Study Bible. It puts forth the very best of Lutheran scholarship at a level that anyone can understand, and it goes deep into that scholarship so that you can learn as much as you really want to learn with regard to a particular passage or a book of the Bible. The Lutheran Study Bible. Call Concordia Publishing House and pre-order your copy. 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can go to our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find there the Lutheran Study Bible, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June. In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., straight ahead, Maggie Gallagher joins us. We're going to talk about some of the troubles with social conservatives, a little too much dependence on the secular Messiah, if everyone just got up off their duffs and did what they needed to do, we could turn this place around syndrome. We'll talk about some of those things with Maggie Gallagher on the other side of this break. Hour 2 of Issues Etc. in 7 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.